Hello, world. This is Al Rod.
And I'm Lady Rain.
Welcome to the Rod and Rain Show. Tonight, we will be discussing a horror anthology called American Nightmares. And there are a total of 8 stories. And we will be ranking the individual stories.
I want to begin with a elaboration on we will be discussing American Nightmares, Tales from the Crib.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that that's going to make a difference on the conversation, but all the other ones we've talked about from Rusty and Darren have been Tales from the Hood.
Yes.
So I just found it interesting that they tagged on this line to American Nightmares.
Was that always there?
When you Google it, when you look it up, it's there.
I feel like when we started watching this in 2018, though, I don't think that was there.
It's there when you look it up, as if it's always been there.
Is it some Mandela effect thing?
It might be. Not... It might be, because it's there.
All right.
Yeah. So, I guess it's always been the title. I don't know. I'm looking. Let me look.
Yeah, because I feel like...
Maybe that, not.
I feel like that was like IMDb, a last-minute addition.
IMDb doesn't have it, but... Well, maybe not, because the cover art doesn't have it either.
That's what I was thinking.
So they must have added it on there to, I guess...
Give it some kind of association? Give it
some relevance and association to, like, this is a Rusty and Darren movie.
Because I will say that... Subtitle does not in any way seem appropriate.
Okay, that's what I was going to get to. Yeah, I'm looking at the cover art. It's not on the cover art. So I'm guessing maybe it's just this platform, or it was a late edition or something. Because, yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't know what that tagline's supposed to mean for the tales, because it doesn't really match. So, right. Okay, we'll just call it American Nightmares.
So... We will be ranking the individual stories in the American Nightmares horror anthology.
Yeah.
So, there are a total of 8 stories. So, we will be ranking them from what we felt was
the weakest. The
worst, or, well, yeah, let's say weakest. The weakest to what we felt was the best story. So... My number 8 is Mates. And I kind of surprised myself with this one, because when I think we didn't have an in-depth discussion about American Nightmares. But I feel like when we did kind of have surface level talks, I think this story... I think I ranked it pretty high. And
really?
Yeah, I ranked it high because I just enjoyed it, and I still enjoy it, but it's really the Reggie character that saves it.
He is just
because he's just funny as hell. But for the most part, I can't really discern what this story is really communicating in terms of its message, because the story centers on this woman named Shanika, and she is distancing herself from a very toxic relationship from this man named Reggie, who was very abusive. So she's on the hunt for something else. And out of nowhere, really, she gets this, what is it? She gets something in the mail.
It's like a gift certificate.
Yeah, gets a gift certificate to try out this dating website. And unbeknownst to her, this man is a robot. And she gets back home, sleeps with him, And
he's checking off all her boxes.
Yeah, he's like Mr. Right.
It's like everything she put in her little profile, like that's who showed up on this date, and they just hit it off.
Yeah.
But he's a robot.
But he's a robot. And I think shortly after they sleep together, Reggie shows up at the door and reveals that he's the one that set her up with the robot. And why he does this, I don't understand. Because, I mean, this service is promoted as like, hey, this is the answer to all your dating woes. Like, I don't see how this was supposed to work in Reggie's favor.
Yeah, like, essentially, Reggie was trying to prove this point of, like, you want a perfect man and had to go on this site and get it from a robot. Can't you see that, like, everything you want in a man just isn't realistic? You ain't gonna get it. And it's apparently supposed to, I guess, make Reggie look better and desirable, and Shanika's supposed to be like, you know what, I guess you the best I'm gonna get, I'll come back.
Yeah, it's like, that was the response you were looking for?
It's, no.
Yeah.
He shows up, and he's just this, like, I mean, he's not any better than how she's already explained he was when they were together. He's disrespectful, he's toxic, he's abusive, he's all these things, but he's supposed to be the better choice compared to this robot that was everything she wanted. Just he isn't a real, it's not a real man.
And when she's talking to her friend, it's already known Reggie was hitting on her.
Right.
Doing all kinds of foul shit. So there was no hope as far as their relationship was concerned. And yeah, I think with this story, even though it's comedic, but for the most part, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to really be getting out of it, because I'm not sure what it's saying about Shanika. I'm not sure what it's saying about Reggie. It's just a story.
So I'm going to say, I was on the fence about whether this was going to be my number 7 or my number 8.
Yeah.
And it was because I did get entertainment value from
this. I was gonna say, it's very
so I was going to put it in 7, but as I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, again, I set a criteria of, okay, how am I going to look at these movies and rank them? And if I stick to the criteria I've given myself of the horror elements, the message, and the social relevance of whatever issue is in there, that's my criteria. Mates does not have a message to me that is evident, clear. I can interpret it. Like, there's nothing there. So I too have it at 8.
You have it at 8. Okay.
I have it at 8. It's been between 7 and 8. I have 3 different versions of this list. Mm-hmm. But I have it at 8 because if I'm sticking to my own little personal rubric, like, the message is, this is probably the only, I want to call it a tale, I don't know if we're going to call these tales, but this is the only story in this anthology where I'm reaching, I am grabbing for something to be like, oh, this is what I was supposed to get out of it. And there's no strong, clear message for me in Mates. Entertainment value, it be in the top 4. Because it is hilarious. Yeah. The performance of Reggie cracks me up. Like, if I had comedy elements as one of my criteria, then it's up there.
Yeah.
But it's a horror anthology, and it had very low horror and almost no message, if any.
Yeah, I mean, it would be different if, I guess, Shanika maybe was written a little differently. I mean, naturally,
you're not going to want to be with someone who's beating you.
Yeah, it's like naturally you sympathize with her. All your sympathy is with her. Because, like, Reggie is an abusive asshole.
Right, I would have understood, like, if she broke up with him and we found out it was something nitpicky. Like, she didn't like his eyebrows. Or, like, something petty. Like, she really does, like, want this perfect man. And she left a decent relationship for something, like, little.
Yeah.
That would have made a little more sense. But, like, when she's like, oh, we were only together 6 months before he started hitting me. No, that's a reason to leave somebody.
Exactly.
Like, that's a reason to want better for yourself. And yes, you are absolutely entitled to having, like, a good relationship after that.
Right.
Like, that's where it gets lost. It's different if her friend was like, girl, you left him because you ain't like how he tied his shoes. then it's like, okay, you are just picky as hell.
Yeah, that's why I'm just like...
So I don't know what we were, where this was supposed to go when she had a legitimate reason to, like, not be with Reggie.
Yeah, exactly.
And exactly. You can see why, you know, she would be enticed by Jalen, is the name of this robot. Because it does check all her boxes. She did have a good time. She did feel safe and protected and desired and all of the things that a woman deserves to feel with a partner. It just happened right. to be a robot.
That's what's confusing me, because the story is executed in a way where it appears like it's trying to lampoon something, but I don't know what it's lampooning, because Shanika rightfully is chasing something else. It just so happens... She wasn't aware it was a robot.
It was a robot. I'm sure the website wasn't like, hey, sign up for your robot here.
Yeah, so I guess what's left is just evaluating what does it mean if she's gravitating to something that isn't real.
Right.
In the face of maybe her trauma that she experienced with Reggie, and just trying to kind of mentally... play and all of that to synthesize some kind of meaning out of it, which I haven't yet. But it's like, if there's meaning there, it's in mentally wrestling with all of that, and I'm just not there yet, maybe. Or it's just, it is what it is, and there's not much else to really glean from it other than, yeah. So yeah, that was my number 8, and that's not to say I hated the story. It was entertaining. Yeah. Reggie's...
It's like probably number 2 for me in entertainment value.
Yeah, like his whole rant.
His delivery.
I can't stand these hoes. It gets me every time.
Hilarious.
But, I mean, of course, when he actually flips and starts trying to choke her out and everything, that's not fun to watch. But for the most part, it was...
entertaining, that, but it's just very weak story. Weak message.
I thought so.
And for it to be the first story out, like, after the wraparound introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the start of the anthology, is on this comedic, just kind of unclear.
Yeah, I remember the first time watching it, because we were off the heels of watching Tales from the Hood 2. So seeing that as the first story... Even though I laughed, I was like, oh my God, we're in for more.
More Tales from the Hood 2 type stuff, yes.
So I felt like that.
It's like we're going goofy horror.
Yeah, my first time watching it, I was like, oh, this is setting a tone I'm a little worried about. Right. But,
yeah, but I mean, it got better.
Yeah, it did.
Starting this one out with that story was a weird choice.
Yeah.
So that was my number 8 as well. So, for all the reasons I've already said, so I guess we'll kick it back to you for number 7.
Yeah. All right. So we got number 8 done. My number 7 is The Healer, and
really,
I know, oh, man. Wow. I knew you.
This
were gonna
is
be
gonna
like,
be
what?
A very interesting conversation, because. Yeah, I thought I knew what was going to be. Wow.
Yeah, I knew you were going to trip off of it. Yeah,
wow. The healer
is my number 7.
I am scared for the rest of this combo now, because I'm like, we're already off base.
I don't hate this story. I love, gosh, I never can remember this actor's name, but the one who plays Bishop Love in this story.
I just looked it up, too.
He's such
something.
I love him as an actor. I think he's really good. And he's really good in this story. So
his name is Barry.
Barry?
The actor. Shabaka Henley.
Barry Shabaka Henley. Yeah, he's really good in this story. He's good in everything I've ever seen him in. So definitely not a disappointment here. But... yeah, he plays this bishop who is
a false healer.
He's a false healer.
That he builds his platform off of being a healer. Like, I feel like it's less about the religion and more about just have faith in me and my healing hands.
Yeah. But I mean, the religion is kind of like a foundation.
It is.
So, Yeah, he pretty much exploits people's desperation and faith in his in his non-healing. And we have Clarence Williams, who actually shows up in this story. He kidnaps him, and he's angry with Bishop Love because he exploited his daughter's desperation, who had his daughter had cancer, and she was a fanatic about Bishop Love and heavily relied on his healing water, thinking that it was going to help with her cancer, and she ended up dying. And of course her father's upset, and he takes a sample of his dead daughter's tears. He still has her, he's running around with her dead body, and has the bishop drink it, and he says he discovered real magic somehow that would make him a healer. And it actually does end up making him a healer, but what happens is he takes on Bishop Love takes ailment. Yeah. Yeah, Bishop Love takes on all of the ailments of the people that are struggling
and that touch him. Anyone he's coming into contact with after the magic is placed on him. He takes that person's ailment, and the other person is now healed, and he has now received the ailment.
Yeah. So it concludes with Clarence Williams' daughter. She gets up, touches him, and it appears that Bishop Love dies at the end of this tale.
Yeah.
And it was well executed, but I thought it was just kind of kind of predictable.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was a little predictable.
I am just blown away by this.
Yeah, I didn't hate it, but it was just such a, I don't know, it was just kind of like, I don't want to say cookie cutter, because that sounds just too,
I don't think it was
cookie cutter. It sounds too dismissive of the story itself. But, I don't know. I thought maybe just the other tales above it just had more impact on me than this one did. Because you see this all the time. It's like,
really? Please tell me. I'm like, I can't say much because it's not, I don't have it in the same spot. So I'm trying to hold off. But, okay.
Yeah.
All I got is okay.
Yeah. I just thought it was kind of, What's the word for it?
Like, I'm surprised you said you feel like you see this all the time. I'm like, where?
What do you mean?
I guess the healing storyline? I don't.
Oh, I'm not saying the specific storyline itself, but we've seen the corrupt church figure lampooned in all forms of media.
And oh, yeah.
This is just another one that it's included in.
But to see it as a horror story.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Like, I didn't find it all that horrific, honestly.
There was a whole dead chick laying on the floor in the van.
That's not...
A dead body crying.
Yeah, is horror. As far as horror imagery is concerned, that barely...
Getting up and swapping with an old dude.
That's what it is. As far as horror imagery, it didn't move the needle for me in that way. Well,
okay, I'm going to just be quiet because it's not down there on my list.
So you're number seven.
My number seven is Ratters.
Okay.
Ratters is the wraparound for this movie. And I put it at number seven because, one, I just wasn't crazy about the characters.
The characters, yeah.
The two guys. I didn't mind Danny Trejo and the old woman. Danny Trejo in himself is a horror element to me in this movie. So he was not a reason why this is down at number seven, but it was the two main characters and their dialogue, and they were like hacker versions of Kahad and that other guy from Tales from the Hood.
They did remind me of them. This is my number six, by the way. So
Oh, okay. All right. So we're kind of close there. Yeah, no, I just, I wasn't quite understanding. I was like, I know that they were like, you know, hackers, and I guess they would like screen grab or like steal footage of whatever they were hacking of like girls who were in suggestive or sexual type of things in their cameras. Mm-hmm. And then they'd exploit it and then make them pay money to like have them not post it on all their feeds or whatever. You know, they would pretty much blackmailing chicks with their own footage. Mm-hmm. I got all of that, but I don't know if it was clear to me what the message was.
Well,
like, don't use your video cameras. Like, I just, I mean, it's like
they're hacking into other women's cameras and using it to essentially
for financial gain.
Yeah, they're using it to blackmail them.
I understand all that. I guess, okay, maybe.
And I think the story one of them shares, the I forget the character's name, is Stu, the kid with the glasses, when he talks about this girl that he saw playing with a vibrator, and he basically tried to get $800 out of her
for an to keep him from posting.
To keep him from posting it. And when he checks up on her, he finds out that she killed herself after he had shared.
Yeah, she didn't pay the money, yeah, so he blasted all of her platforms with this footage of her that he hacked from her
so
camera.
I think the wraparound is effectively woven into that theme in some of these tales, as you see some characters that are just so consumed with money, they're so myopic in that capitalist pursuit that they end up fucking themselves in certain cases. And I felt like this kind of, even though
for me, I felt like the wraparound didn't do a good job of connecting to all of the tales. Like, I could see how some of the tales.
I don't think this wraparound was supposed to.
But it's a wraparound.
Well,
I feel like the wraparound's still supposed to be like the chain.
Even in Tales from the Hood, the wraparound only connected to one tale, which was the one at the end. I mean, the wraparound isn't supposed to connect to each story.
But the wraparound integrated, each tale was integrated into the wraparound in Tales from the Hood. Like, each story was somebody who was there in the mortuary. So, like, you still had a connection to the wraparound from within the tale.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
But for this one, it's like some of the, like on the screen, they would have, like, these, like, keywords pop up for each tale in this one. And I felt like some of, like, the terms or words they'd have up, I'm like, what's that got to do with the wraparound? Like, for example, the one we just talked about, the healer. Mm-hmm. Like, before a tale starts, Danny Trejo's character, Mr. Malevolent is his name, would say, this story is called The Healer. And then it would put on the hacker's screens, like, various, like, buzzwords or whatever that are kind of, what's the theme of this tale you're about to hear? Mm-hmm. So for, like, The Healer, it would pop up, like, faith, greed, I can't remember what the other words were that popped up, but like each screen had a different word. It's like, okay, I could see how, you know, greed connects to the hackers or,
that's what I was asking.
But like faith, religion, like all of those pieces don't really relate to the hacker wraparound story, the ratter's story to me. I'm like,
The greed does,
but I'm saying like.
But it's like not every key word has to be in. I mean, that story is directly relevant.
I could see how the greed ties to
that. And then you have to also look at, this is American Nightmare, so they're looking at all of our vices. I feel like this whole anthology is about our ideologies that has us at one another, our myopic pursuit of profit while ignoring everything else morally. And I mean, these are all like very American things. And I think the hackers are representative of just that toxic American mindset run amok.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that at all. I just don't know that every tale connected back to it, like mates and robots and online dating.
I think you have a case for mates. Yeah,
like I don't know how mates, the first story out,
is, absolutely not
is bringing in to that. And I don't want to name others just because we haven't talked about all the tales yet.
So, I can't even argue mates.
Yeah,
mates,
I was like, we haven't talked all the tales yet, so I could always come back.
Yeah. But mates is in no way relevant to them.
Yeah. But anyway, so it was just a seven to me because it wasn't a strong wraparound for me, as far as the characters, the two male characters, and then at the end of the wraparound, the closing of the wraparound, like that creature that like took out whoever Glasses Boy was, I was like, wait a minute, where the fuck did that come from? Like that was just a weird element to me.
It was, but
like I knew that they were going to have to, like, you know, die in this wraparound, but I thought it would be more directly tied to Danny Trejo and the old woman the computers. And,
it was very
and abrupt. Something like that.
Yeah.
I thought it would have to do more with, like, them being hackers and Danny hacking in. Because Mr. Malevolent is telling all these tales by hacking into their system and showing them these tales. So he's kind of giving them a taste of their own medicine of, like, you're out here hacking these people, well, I've hacked into you and they can't figure out like where they're being hacked from and they're supposed to be these top-notch hackers. So that's how they're even watching all of these tales, because they're not like watching a movie or something. They're trying to watch all these chicks on their webcams. But Mr. Malevolent keeps hacking into their computers every time they think they got their connection back, and then he throws another tale at them. So I just thought that would have been more of like their demise. In this wraparound, but instead it's like this alien, otherworldly creature just appears out of nowhere that had shit to do with any tales we heard, had nothing to do with Mr. Malevolent and the old woman. I was just like, what is that?
Yeah.
And that was like, it didn't connect for me there. I'm like, I thought the demise would have been like at their own hand or at Mr. Malevolent's hand. And so that was weird.
Well, I think they suggest at one moment in the movie that when they hacked the camera of those three girls at the end.
The witches. Yeah.
I think they summon a demon to attack them. That's what I gathered from it. I mean, it's abrupt. And I get it.
Do see that. I can, like, the last webcam that they hack is, like, these three witches that they thought were going to be doing something, I guess, sexy.
And Mr. Malevolent very well could have known what they were doing.
Like, yeah.
He could have set that up.
I know, he could have, but I just thought they could have went out more directly tied to, like, Mr. Malevolent in the computers or something could have been more their demise. Like, the actual act of, like, them hacking or, like, just not a alien, otherworldly creature to me. It was just, I mean, or demon, you're calling it. To me, it looked like
There was a pentagram on the ground. They were obviously doing demonic shit.
I know that, but I didn't see a demon that took them out. I saw an alien from Men in Black take them out with tentacles or whatever it is. Point is, I didn't like the demise of the dudes. I ain't like the dudes, and not every story came back to the wraparound to me in a way that made sense. So that's why it's number seven.
Fair enough.
I think for me, maybe the bulk of my issue is because mates doesn't connect. So my problem is more with mates versus ratters. But because of that disconnect, they both have to take a ding.
mates does not.
So that's why they're eight and
seven. There's no overlap between the themes of mates and what the hackers have going on.
Right.
So I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you did what? That was
my number seven.
So since I had Riders at number six, you might as well do your number six.
I was just sitting here thinking, I think I am reverting back to the list I had before this one. Mm-hmm. So my number six is Hate Radio.
Sorry, I gotta give it away because It just makes for better back and forth talk.
It does. Okay, so I don't even know like how to explain why it's my number six. It's kind of like our one of our other movie talks where it's just like there were other stories that were better than it.
Yeah.
So this is one where I'm not like, oh, it's a bad story or anything. There are just other stories I prefer above it.
Yeah.
Because I thought it did a really good job of, I mean, it had some horror with the chopper. And I guess, like, if you're male, there's some horror in, like, his transition to to so, becoming...
Yeah. Set the stage for the story.
So, Hate Radio is this radio host who is uber conservative, yeah. Just uber MAGA. And so he runs a radio show that's pretty much all that and just touting all of their... ideals, and he takes in calls from, you know, individuals who either agree or disagree, but he preferred they agree. Mm-hmm. And at the same time he's hosting this radio show, there's apparently like this serial killer in their community called the Chopper. Mm-hmm. And he's known, or he or she, at the time we don't know who the Chopper is, but the Chopper targets females as their serial killing victim. Mm-hmm. And so there's a segment of the show where the radio host, his name is Hugh Bluff, is talking about how, you know, women need to stay in their place and seen and not heard and all of these things. And a caller comes in and he's got this super fan named Felix who calls in. And
and you can tell it's Hugh Bluff's rhetoric that's radicalized Felix.
Yes, Felix is like uber Hugh Bluff, and anything he says, like, he just couldn't be wrong. And he's like, you know, I think the Chopper is kind of doing us a favor. Mm-hmm. All hail the Chopper for, you know, taking care of these, like, disobedient women, so to speak, to follow in Hugh Bluff's kind of, like, anti-feminist type speak. And then... after the radio show, Hugh's going home. He gets this gift at the radio station of a picture of him, like, in his flag garb. He's all Americaned out. But when yeah. he gets home and reopens the box, now in the picture, it's him dressed as, like, a woman against the backdrop of this American flag. And he's like, what the hell is this? And he throws it away. And then when he goes upstairs, like, gets prepared for bed or whatever, he's taking a shower, he starts going through this physical transition from male to female, like physically developing female parts. So in that is some horror for men, because yeah, like he loses his genitalia.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable even for me, and I don't even know what that would ever feel like.
Never want to know.
But as he is turning into this woman, he's like trying to like get out of his house, I guess, to like get to help. And he ends up passing out from, like, I guess the pain, like, right in front of his house. This car drives up and is like, hey, ma'am, are you okay? And then it cuts to Hugh Bluff is now female Bluff, wrapped up in this, like, tarped room. And Felix is there saying, hey, what were you doing in front of Hugh Bluff's house? He's, you know, this is his idol. And, the female Bluff is trying to say, I am Hugh Bluff. What are you talking about? And Felix is like, you're fucking crazy. Hugh Bluff would not like to hear that you're claiming to be him or some mm-hmm. shit. And then we find out that Felix is the Chopper and he's about to, this is his next victim, not believing that female Bluff is Hugh Bluff. So he's technically about to kill his idol, but doesn't realize it. So that's Hate Radio. I have it at six. That's what I said. Yep, I have it at six. I mean, it was a serviceable story. There was horror to it, like the horror of the Chopper as a serial killer, knowing that they're just out there killing women just cause, and there are people that are this extreme in their following of a Hugh Bluff type individual in today's America. Like, all of that is horrifying. Like, there are people who take that following, like, it's a way of life for them. Mm-hmm. And they will act upon it in defense of this false idol. And it all makes sense. And I'm talking it through, and I'm like, it probably should have been a little higher, but I have it at 6 just because there's this other ones that captured me better. But, I mean, the social commentary is relevant. There's some horror there. The message is, like, it's good.
It is good.
It's good.
For all the reasons you just said.
I like the story. It's just, it's number 6 because some other stuff was better to me, apparently.
Yeah. I love it a lot. I think I ranked it a little low when I got it. I have it at 5. But yeah, because of everything you said, it's amazing. And then also, back to what capitalism does to us and how it just perverts our thinking. Hugh Bluff, when Felix calls in, he's motioning like off
he's doing like a, this caller is cuckoo.
He's motioning that Felix is crazy. So he knows what his rhetoric does to people.
Yeah.
But
he keeps fueling it.
But he fuels it anyway because he makes money from it. And that's what so many right-wing grifters are doing right now. There are so many talking heads radicalizing people every day to just do fucked up, crazy shit.
Yeah.
And they keep pushing it. They keep people angry. And as long as the dollars keep flowing in, they keep doing it. And they know what they're doing to that segment of people. And they know they're nuts. They just don't care because they profit from it.
Yeah.
I think I ranked this one a little low just for superficial things to nitpick, but in no way did it interfere with my enjoyment of the story. But I was watching it tonight. I didn't realize how short this one was. This was one of the shorter ones.
I wanted to like time each story because some of that one did feel short.
Yeah, that one felt really short. And
that one and one other one that we haven't talked about felt short to me.
Yeah. So yeah, Hate Radio felt kind of short, but that's not a big reason why. You know.
If you can tell the story in the time.
Yeah, yeah, I mean it was one of those stories where you could be literally in and out and it would have sufficed. But I think a reason I just kind of deducted some points from it was, one, it's not really explained how Hugh goes through this transition. Right. Why is his dick falling off?
And who sent the picture?
He literally just opens a box and he sees like this picture that he appreciates at first. Yeah. He's like, it's got the flag in the background.
Yeah, that's me. Look at me looking all Trump-like.
And then he opens it again. And
he's in a dress.
Looks like he's in drag. And you're like, okay. And then he starts growing boobs. His dick falls off.
Are we to assume that Felix gave him that? Like, that's the other piece I'm not clear on. Like, where was it supposed to have come from?
I don't know. For him to
go through this. It was like, did some voodoo lady send it to him?
That's
like,
what it's I'm just, saying. Yeah. It's not explained how that happened. Yeah. I mean, you gotta give me something. Was it a spell? Is this
how Felix has been getting his victims? Like, I am just confused.
You can't just have him open a box and his dick falls off 2 minutes later.
Right. Mean,
that's too much.
That is a bit much without any explanation.
So,
I mean, that's probably a good reason why I have it at 6, too, where it's just like the initiation of the transition is not clear.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did this package come from? Didn't it just say like from your biggest fan or something? Yeah.
They kept it real generic.
So it's like, are we supposed to think that Felix sent him this?
No, because Felix
and it cursed
really...
him and turned him to a woman. No, I'm like, what the hell?
I don't buy that.
I don't either. So that's why I'm like, that was strange.
Yeah.
Because you would think that Felix was his biggest fan.
Yeah, but I mean, clearly that was somebody that hated him.
Right, and just sent it under the guise of
I love you.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah. So there was that. And then also, I think the way Felix found him was a bit too convenient. Like
was he just driving the streets?
He transitions, and as soon as he falls out on the driveway, the chopper happens to be driving.
Well, see, and that's why I was like, did he send him this to turn, like, to...
I don't think so.
I don't think so, but it's like...
He really thought that was not him.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I'm like, how would he know where Hugh Bluff lives? He's like, what were you doing outside of Hugh Bluff's house?
Yeah, it was just too convenient.
It was weird.
That bit was a little too convenient. That was it. That's like the only thing I really could...
He said that was your number five?
That was my number five.
So it's time for my number five?
Yeah.
Okay, what was your number six?
Raiders.
Ah, that's right. I just like to keep track to see how close we were. And then Hate Radio was your number five. So my number five is The Samaritan.
The Samaritan is your number five, you said?
Yes.
Okay. Go for it.
All right, so... The Samaritan is essentially this terminally ill man orders a sex worker from a guy. I don't know that he had a name.
Blue shirt pimp.
Blue shirt pimp.
Pimp in a blue shirt.
And so they make house calls, apparently. And so he is delivering one of his workers to this terminally ill man. But he wasn't aware that this client was terminally ill till they show up. And so he charges him more. He's like, oh, this is going to cost extra because I didn't know you looked like death when I was bringing you this chick. And then when he gets in, this client then also says, oh, I just love clowns. Let me take you to this back room of mine that looks like a circus. Could you also dress up as a clown to engage in this transaction we're about to have? Mm. And then so Blue Shirt Pimp is like, that's going to cost you even more. And in the midst of all of this, this client is paying him in cash that he's just pulling out of like random vases in his apartment. Like he's just got money stashed all in his apartment. I guess, you know, he's like homebound. He's walking around with like an oxygen tank. And so he's just pulling cash out of like flower pots and vases and drawers every time the pimp is like, that'll cost you extra, that'll cost you extra. So now the pimp has this idea of like, he's got to have money just hidden all over this place. So he's got it set in his mind that while his worker is with the client, he's going to be looking for extra cash all over this so he can get an even bigger payday. Mm-hmm. So while he is out looking for cash and client is going to get freshened up, he's got the worker in the circus room making herself up as his clown, but she keeps noticing a light cutting on and off in this closet behind her. She can see the light from under the door, and so she finally kind of like gets some bravery and is like, let me just go investigate. And she opens this closet door, and at first she sees nothing, so she's like, okay, I'm just tripping. But then she closes the closet, light flicks on again, and she's just like, what in the world? She opens the door, and it's like this corpse, but alive, of another worker who was not successful in exiting this man's apartment.
Yeah.
The client killed her after the transaction, and this corpse is like, I'm just trying to help you, or you're going to end up like me. They're only able to communicate, or this worker's only able to hear the corpse if they're holding this crucifix that the worker brought with her. She's clinging to this crucifix, holding on to her faith while she's going through this. So once this corpse is like, you've got to get out of here, he's going to kill you, she's trying to escape and finds out that her blue shirt pimp has already been murdered out in the front room. So now she's even more ready to go. Client comes out dressed as a clown, which is the horror to me, for anyone knows I just don't like clowns. But he's a murderous clown. And so he's on his mission to now try to take her out with this like machete-like sword that he has in place of
his genitalia region. It's very strange. But then you know what I mean. Thank you. It's a long sword.
Yeah,
yes, a katana. So to protect herself, the worker opens the closet, takes the corpse's hand, and touches it to her crucifix, and then the corpse helps her kill this clown client, John.
Yeah.
And then she lets the corpse keep the crucifix, and she's on her way out. So that's essentially what it is. It's called the Samaritan. Because a part of the interaction between the worker and the corpse worker is where she's saying, I'm just trying to, it's like I'm a kind soul trying to save her or something. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like trying to do good so that you don't end up like me, essentially, from one worker to another. So I have it at number 5. Because, again, another good story. It's just, it's got to be in the middle because I have top stories. But the horror was there. The commentary was there. You know, the horrors of sex trafficking because you don't know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. The impact of greed.
Yep.
From the blue shirt pimp, you know, he's driven by greed.
Yep.
Not even caring about like what position he's putting this worker in with this dude who has his weird request. He's just like, you go handle that. And he even says, he was like, make sure he doesn't finish too quick.
So because
he wants more time to like look for money for his greed. So it's like, he's just in it for this big payday. Cause you know, he ain't gonna give her none of this. And, she's just out there pretty much to fend for herself. And I just thought it was well done. Mm-hmm. It was dark. It was horrific. It tied into, you know, like another problem in America. It was tied to like a nightmare in America. Trafficking is a very big problem, and it's horror in itself. So kind of addressing it in the way that it did here and bringing in a little bit of a supernatural element. I thought it was smart, but I just put it at 5 because, again, there's just 4 other stories that I have to get to.
I hear you. Yeah, I really like that story. I remember the first couple of times watching American Nightmares. That story, for whatever reason, was one of my least favorites.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. But the more I watch it, I'm like, I really like it. I failed to mention, so the sick client guy is played by Chris Kattan. How do you say his name?
I'm not sure.
I think it's Chris Kattan. He did a really good job to be known for like Saturday Night Live and like comedy and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought he was actually pretty believable here as like this dying sick guy who wants to murder sex workers. But it was a good story.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I liked it.
It's actually one of my favorites now.
Yeah.
Funny enough.
It's not one of my favorites because fuck clown, but it is a good story.
So my number 4 is The Prosecutor.
My number 4 is also The Prosecutor.
Oh, we share a number 4.
So
nice.
We can talk about this one together.
All right, let's go back and forth on this one. So, yeah, The Prosecutor is pretty good. It follows this prosecutor who is also running for governor.
He was the attorney general.
His name, I'm blanking.
Moreland. I only remember it because of The Wire.
Oh, Bunk.
Bunk Moreland. That's the only reason I remembered it. Yeah, his name was, I don't remember his first name, but he was Moreland for governor. That's what the sign said in his yard.
So he's very notable for being responsible for a huge population of people getting put on death row. And he kind of prides himself on that fact for political reasons. Mm-hmm. So this inmate, Floyd Johnson, who we later learn is innocent of the crime he was accused of committing, he's set to be... put to death through lethal injection. And, you know, when this is brought to Moreland's attention, he just kind of shoves the fact under the rug for the sake of his own.
Yeah, he's like, I'm about to be governor tomorrow.
Yeah, so, exactly. It's like for the sake of his, for what's politically expedient for him, it's like he just shoves truth right out the way. And once again, it's that American ambition, that greed is like, it's fucking everyone over in the end. And Moreland, he decided not to go to his execution. And while Moreland's home, it appears that I can't tell exactly what Floyd is doing here. He's got the Bible in his hand, and he seems to, it's not really clear what he's saying.
Yeah.
Like, he appears to be maybe saying a prayer, but there's like some wild shit that goes on in Moreland's house, and Moreland starts having visions.
I almost feel like he was like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, not summoning himself, but like, I
think he possessed Moreland.
Yes. I was trying to figure out the words. I think he was like using the Bible as a way to transport like his spirit to Moreland or something, mm-hmm. to possess Moreland from a distance, remotely, mm-hmm. to remotely access Moreland's consciousness and have him execute the crime that Moreland had him unrightfully found guilty for.
Yeah.
That's what I think happened.
That's what I think happened as well. So, yeah, Moreland kills his whole family, and he's just dumbfounded at the fact that he's being accused of this because he's not aware. Based on what he saw going on in his house,
Floyd was there
doing everything. And he tries to accuse Floyd of doing it, but they tell him Floyd was put to death, what, 30 minutes ago? Mm-hmm. And he can't believe it. He's stunned. And then later, it turns out he's pretty much put in the position that he put Floyd in, and he ends up getting put to death for the crime of killing his entire family.
So, watching this last week and again today, because I've always liked this story. Mm-hmm. I liked it when we watched it when the movie first came out. But watching it now recently, I think I'm liking it even more in light of the recent events of what happened with Marcellus Williams. Did you hear about him?
Yeah, I read about that.
And so watching it this time, I'm like, I was seeing it through that lens of like, I hope someone in that situation would get that same type of karma, you know? I was like, it was like, I wasn't even seeing it as Floyd Johnson this time. Like, I was seeing it as Marcellus. And I'm like, man, because even like, because his last words were religious words. I can't remember exactly what they were, but it was like, praise be to Allah. I mean, it was like, praise be to Allah or something. Like, they had reported what his last words were. And all he had to say was just like, I think it was just a one line statement, and it was religious in nature. And so this made me think directly to that of like, I wonder what he was doing before they unjustly executed him. Without further investigating. So yeah, it just made me think of like the real current event now, even though this movie was 6 years ago.
Damn, 6 years. Wow.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. Yeah. So, that just had me drawn into it even more with this most recent rewatch because I was making that direct connection to real world shit that was just so, it should have been more insightful than I think it was, but
that's so disheartening though, because you go back to some of this stuff and it's so disappointing to me the endless amounts of anecdotal things from our contemporary society that we can apply to all of this older work. It's like,
right.
Like when we it's were like watching Tales from the Hood, yeah. I remember you bringing up all those cases of police brutality that yeah. were like 20 years removed from that.
Yeah.
And you could
and
plug
you
it
can
right
still,
in.
It would it, fit. It fits.
Just, it was, yeah. It sucks, it man. It sucks that you can just go back to this and be like, oh, that's like some shit that happened
that's
yesterday.
Like some shit that happened now, but yeah. it was before it happened. Like yeah. this was written before yeah. it happened, but they could have wrote it, you know? Like, yeah. yeah.
It sucks that stuff like this continues to be relevant.
Right. Yeah, no, so I mean, I have it at number 4 in my top half because I thought it was well done. This was the other story that I felt was a little short.
Really?
Like, I felt it, like it, this was it one felt of the short to ones. Me.
Really?
Yeah, it felt short to me, but I don't think it needed to be longer. I mean, I think the length of the story was fine, but it just felt short to me.
While I was watching it tonight, I was thinking this was maybe, I mean, there are maybe a couple others, but this was one of the stories that felt the most fully developed and fleshed out to me.
I mean, no, it felt fleshed out. I just, time-wise, it just felt short.
Really?
But I mean, but they got everything done. Yeah. They told a complete story in the time, but I just felt like it went by too fast.
No, I didn't think that at all. I felt like it was kind of one of the more deliberately paced stories. Yeah.
No, I felt like others. Mates was longer than that. Mates felt longer than this story to me.
Yeah, this one, Mates, and maybe one other one were probably one of the ones on the longer end. We need to go back and time it just so you can see, because this one was actually pretty lengthy. It felt to me.
Mm-hmm. It felt short to me. So yeah, now we gotta watch it one more time just so I can be like, how long were each of these tales? Because the movie all together isn't even what an hour 25. And a half. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah. So that's why I had it at number 4. It was a good story. Just yeah. I still got 3 more to go, but I it's one of my favorites actually. But just,
yeah. I think the only reason it's low on my list is because it opened with that cheap-ass courtroom.
Oh, my God. That courtroom scene was so bad with the judge and the green screen. But then they had, like, a jury and an actual looking, like, a set for a jury pit. And I'm like, you couldn't have a set for a courtroom?
The thing that kills me is you didn't even have to open there. We could have got that he was a prosecutor in some other way.
Exactly.
We didn't need that.
They could have just jumped to the news.
Yeah, exactly.
The news saying Attorney General Moreland is yeah. known for blah, blah, blah. Most people on death row. He's now running for governor. Like,
yeah.
And there we go. But you give us this cheap old courtroom. It's not a courtroom. It's a green screen. And it's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that was terrible. Yeah.
And that's the first one of the first things
it's
you
the
see.
First scene the first scene of that story, you are correct. Yeah it was terrible.
So Prosecutor was what, your number 4?
Yep.
Okay, so my number 3 was The Samaritan. I have The Samaritan at number 3. Yeah, I think you really brought up all of the reasons I like this story. I thought it was just pretty well executed, and I like the symbolism going on with the crucifix. Like when the story opens, she's kind of clinging to it because you can just tell that it's, I got the sense that it was an object that kind of helped her cope mm-hmm. with whatever that she was going to be dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And
like it helped her get through each time she had to do this.
And I like that at the end of the story when they shove the
thing.
Blade,
and
kill the John. I like that it kind of closes with the dead girl like asking, "Hey, you want to keep this?" And she's like, "Nope.
I don't need it now. Yeah, because she's like, I won't be doing this
anymore. Yeah, she's like, she's free from that bondage and like her pimp's even dead, so it's like
find a new path in life.
Yeah, yeah, so she's like, she's not mentally shackled to, you know, all the ill elements of that world anymore. So I thought that was cool. The one thing I just was kind of confused about how the pimp died, because they kept cutting to
The client in the bathroom.
Yeah, they kept cutting to the client in the bathroom, and it's not clear how he got his throat slit.
Well, I'm assuming that the client came out and slit his throat, because remember when they cut to him, he was cleaning his knife in the bathroom.
Oh, I missed that.
Because okay. I was thinking that too, but then I was like, why is he cleaning his knife? And I'm like, at first I was like, is his knife just been bloody this whole time from killing the girl? Okay. And I'm like, oh, he must have just went out, killed the pimp, and that's why they cut to him back in the bathroom. He was cleaning his knife off.
I forgot about that shot, because they were very deliberate about showing that.
Yeah, he was like rinsing the bloody knife off, so that's, I think, that connection we were supposed to make, that he just killed somebody, but it wasn't the chick, because she was still there.
He did that. Okay, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, but I love the story. I think I maybe put it at number three just because some of the stuff that was going on when he got in the clown suit was like bordering on Good Golly vibes to me.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh shit.
Like, where are we going?
Yeah. But luckily that didn't last too long. Yeah,
like the balloon thing.
Yeah,
like, what is he doing with this?
What's up? But yeah, that's probably the only thing is I just felt like once he got in the clown suit, he should have been more menacing instead of, like, they played it a little goofy.
I guess he was supposed to be in clown.
True. Good point.
Clowns are supposed to be kind of goofy. My piece is, are we supposed to...
coming out of his dick region?
True.
That's silly.
The other piece I had for this was... was his like terminal illness all just an act? Because
he was very spry.
He didn't have his oxygen tank or anything once he was in clown suits.
So I think that was
just a way to like get people to think that he was weak.
I think that was an act to make people think he was more vulnerable.
Right. Okay. That was my other thing.
Yeah. There's no way you do that much coughing and shit, and then you put on a clown suit and you're just,
and you have no tank with you, and you're just nothing. Lively. Yeah. Okay. I can see why it's at three for you. That makes sense. My number three is the healer. That's where I was like,
you got that high.
Yeah.
You really like that one.
I like that one.
I ain't mad at it.
I think for me, I'd like it.
I don't think I made a strong case for having it so low. But I still just thought the execution was like just kind of I saw what was going on.
I liked it, but it may be more because of like personal beliefs. I just love to see like religious people like because I am not a believer. And knowing the desperation that someone will go through when they want healing, and how religion is so predatory on people like that.
Absolutely.
Like, Bishop Love had got what was coming to him.
He did.
And so I liked that was like the story they told, where it's like, you know, religion is predatory.
Yeah.
That's the message. That's your capitalism. That's your greed. Like, the religion was kind of like the villain of the story. And
you like it because it put religion in a bad light.
Yeah. Like, that was what...
That sounds petty.
It sounds so bad. But when people are at their lowest and their most desperate, religion is so quick to jump in and be like, all you need is Jesus. And it's like, I have a tumor. And you selling me a bottle of Jesus tears is not going to fix that.
Oh, Evian and some of those bottles.
Right? Yeah, whatever. You know, but it's like, this was a story that shows, you know, like, you make all these empty promises and people are following and believing in you. Like, you've got, there's a payment for that. And so I liked here, like, the payment for that is like, you want to come out here and you want to tout that you're this healer and make these promises to these people who are like desperate on their last hope. Like, there's a give and take. You can't have all of the fame and the money and the, all of that, and you're not giving something up.
You can't have all the reward and nobody's getting better from your shit.
Exactly. So I liked that this was, you want to call yourself a healer, you going to be a healer, but it's going to bleed you dry. It's going to suck you dry.
Literally.
Yeah. I liked it.
No, it, look, man.
It was a, I thought it was well done. It had some horror. It had a message. It worked for me.
It was a good story. I personally don't think it delivered on the horror front all that much. But yeah, I could totally see why it's up there for you. Like, I get it.
And then, I mean, and then it had entertainment value to it, too. It's like, oh, no, it still was, managed to, like, make me laugh.
Yeah, it was
Raggedy funny. Ass Eye is one of my favorite lines. Yeah,
Bishop Love was fucking was hilarious in the first little quarter of that.
Yeah, so I had it at number 3.
Cool. Put it. So, my number 2. This was very close to my
number. All right. Let me see. What you got?
My number 2 is Thy Will Be Done.
Mine too.
Yes.
So, we have the same last two.
Thy Will Be Done. I love this story so much because of how it physically represents a woman's complete loss of autonomy.
Yep.
In the face of this abortion issue. And to see these people kidnap this woman, tie her down to this bed, force her to eat, tell her you're going to nourish this child that was raped into you. Nourish this life that was raped into you. To see it represented in that way, it's just, what the fuck are we doing?
Right.
What are we doing?
Like it is a physical or a visual representation of what America is asking women to endure.
Yeah. Very well put. That's exactly what it is. And that is horrifying. What
your right-winged America is asking American women to endure. Yeah.
I think seeing her on that bed and seeing them try to shove that food down her throat was the most horrifying image in that whole anthology. I mean, yeah, it was just...
It was sickening.
Triggering. It was disgusting. It was. Whoever they got to play the mom in that shit, she was fucking,
you know, despicable. Actually used to be in soap operas.
Really?
Yeah, she was really big in 2 soap operas back in like the 90s.
Oh, I wonder which
because,
one.
Because I gotta remember them because her face was so familiar to me.
I think
one of them was Guiding Light. I can't remember what the other one. You've never heard of Guiding Light?
I've never heard of Guiding Light.
Wow. She was in a bunch of those,
General Hospital.
She was in General Hospital was the other one.
General Hospital?
She was in episodes of General Hospital, which her bigger one was Guiding Light. And that thing had like hundreds of episodes.
Oh, wow.
And she was like a regular.
Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize her. She was very effective here.
Yeah, she was. Because I had to look her up because I was like, why is she so familiar to me? Because my mom used to love her.
I could not stand her ass.
Yeah, she did a really good job.
Oh, my God.
She did a really good job.
And, I mean, this is another story. It didn't feel like it was that long, but for, you know, what was contained in it, it was very effective.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, honestly, this is like, it's kind of basic and bare bones compared to some of the other stories, but it's really just about putting you in that headspace and in that situation and feeling what she feels as a woman being forced into this situation.
And what I really liked about it, it's going to sound weird liking this, but like the fact that she gave birth to like a devil.
Yeah.
Is essentially telling you, like, when you force women to do this, the products that then come from it are not necessarily what America needs. Like, we don't need, like, they're being brought into a world when they were forced into this world.
Yeah, it doesn't set a good foundation.
Exactly. So it's like how what she birthed is now going to give hell to the people that forced it to be born is essentially what happens. Mm-hmm. It's like you force women to do things that are against their, you know, own will, things that they don't want to bring into the world for whatever reason that they're allowed to have, you're kind of wishing hell on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I just thought it was real clever that it wasn't just like, oh, she gave birth to a baby. Like, no, she gave birth to a friggin' demon.
Yeah. Yeah, this story was just really effective. I think the only reason it is not my number one is I actually didn't like the ending. I like that it spawned like a devil.
Yes. Yes.
But it's the way they did those last few moments, I felt was just,
once the devil like
grew up. I was like, this is kind of goofy. And then the dialogue they gave him, I'm just like,
you could have left it at just, that she gave birth to a devil baby.
Yeah, I think it just did a little too much. Devil baby
ripped her heads off or something. Like,
It just did a little too much. Or I would have done it just a little differently.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the only thing that maybe gave me reason to kind of not put it in the first place, I guess.
But, yeah.
Very, very good story. Out of all the tales, that one had me emotionally
triggered. Yes, this story, I think this one probably triggered me the most. This one and the Samaritan, but just because clowns.
Yeah, clowns are always a thing with you. I don't understand,
because they're just too damn jolly, knowing that the person being the clown probably is like depressed as fuck.
So that only leaves
Number one. We got the same one.
We have the same number one.
Yes.
How about that?
White Flight.
White Flight.
It's a genius fucking tale.
This tale is...
it is the best thing.
I love this shit.
I think this is my favorite Rusty tale out of like just all the anthologies.
Really? Yeah, I love this.
I mean, it's not necessarily like horrific. Yeah, it doesn't have horror of like some of like the first Tales from the Hood tales, but it is my favorite like tales to watch.
Yeah, just because it highlights the absurdity of racism in the most simplistic way.
It makes it seem like
it's just the most simplistic.
It makes us look so dumb, it makes racists look so dumb.
Yeah,
when they present it like that in the story, it's like, this is how dumb y'all sound.
Crazy.
It is.
You
got to give the background for the story.
This highlights the absurdity and insanity of racism. And just, it's so beautiful in its simplicity.
Oh my gosh.
So there's this ultra racist man who he gets a time machine delivered to his house.
A working time machine.
Or what is ostensibly a time machine.
Yeah.
Because this man is so racist, he wants to go back to a time where
it was whites and colors.
Yeah, just and
there's no racial mixing, his wife says.
Yeah. And they each get on these platforms to get ready to be beamed to their racist wonderland.
It's the racist, his wife. I'm assuming the other chick is their daughter. It's never
That's what it appeared to be to me.
And like, then the baby daughter.
Yeah, and then the baby. The infant.
So the other chick has no lines or nothing. But yeah. Anyway.
So they get beamed to this what they believe is a racist paradise. They, as soon as they get transported to this new land, they're greeted with a sign that says, "No blacks allowed, ever." And
the town is called White Fork.
Yeah, the town is called White Fork. And he is just overcome with emotion as soon as he sees the sign.
It is hilarious.
That's what
he's like breaking down in happy tears because the sign said that no blacks are allowed in White Fork. Ever.
Yeah. So
it says no blacks allowed.
He is just overwhelmed with emotion at the thought of just this.
No blacks. No black people are going to be
no
here.
No intermingling.
Yes.
With blacks. And they go into town and there's a like the town folk are reacting kind of like suspicious. Like, what the heck is going on? And then there's one man, and this man actually was in a story in the first Tales from the Hood. He was one of the corrupt police officers.
Which I did not ever notice until yeah. You told me.
So this guy, he sees them come up, and he's like, "Blacks! Blacks!" And, you know, the racist man, he doesn't think anything of it. He's like,
he's excited.
Yeah, he's excited. Like,
we're about to see some black people get messed up around here.
Yeah, so he's getting really giddy thinking that everyone else is gearing up to
attack black people.
And there's Rusty makes an appearance in here as
I think he's like the sheriff.
Yeah, there are like three sheriffs that start approaching them. And Rusty appears to be the head sheriff. And he immediately uses some kind of futuristic gun on this man's wife.
And older daughter.
And he's told that this gun fried their insides pretty much, turned their insides into hamburger.
Yeah.
So they're dead, like within seconds.
As soon as they get into town.
And he's like, Why did you do that?
Why'd you kill my wife? Like, what?
And he was like, blacks.
Didn't you read the sign?
Did you read the sign?
No blacks allowed. No blacks. Ever.
And he's like, they're not black, you're black. And they're like, fool, what? Not black skin, black hair.
He's like, why? Nobody cares about black skin. It's them little black hairs that we can't stand.
Yeah. So they kill this man's wife, his older daughter, and then the head sheriff inspects the baby and sees that she also has dark hair and puts her in a sack and starts
because the smart guns don't work on babies. They're too big to work on babies apparently. So they have to go the old school way. If you're young and got black hair, they can't use the new kind of, I guess, more humane smart gun on it. So they put this black haired baby in a sack and just go to town on it. But it's triggering the racist guy because he was a cop in his previous dimension. And
had to resign from the force after brutally beating a black person. I guess he pulled over in a traffic stop or something. Mm-hmm. Brutally beats a black person. So now he's kind of having these flashbacks to that beating that he imposed on the black person that they're now imposing on his black-haired baby, because he's in a town that said no blacks allowed, and he thought they meant black people. So I thought that was also a little clever piece. But man, I fucking love this story.
Me too. I just think it just perfectly reflects the stupidity.
Yes, because kind of when they kill his wife, the racist guy's name is Thomas Boucher. And so Thomas is like, why'd you do that? Why'd you kill my wife? And the townsman is like, you married one of them? And that is like a racist response to like a white person being married to a black person. But it's like, because she had black hair. It's like, you married someone with black hair, because Tommy Boucher is like a blonde headed, like a sandy haired individual. So it's just, it was just so hilarious, because hearing it come out in that context sounds ridiculous. But that's what racism sounds like coming out of these people's mouths.
Yeah.
It's that ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you married one of them? Like, that is the thought process of racists.
Yeah. And
it's just genius and entertaining. It's not necessarily horror, because it's comedy in a way, but I guess the horror is in, like, the baby in the sack. Yeah, I was going to say,
the baby bashing is horrific. First, you're like, it's so weird, that particular moment in the story, because at first you're looking at it and you're just like, this dude really about to do this? This is just crazy. And then you see him really bash this
gas station.
It's such dark comedy at that moment, but then when it's spliced with those images of Thomas beating that black person when he was a cop, mm-hmm. when they're constantly cutting back to that, you're just seeing the absurdity is just really put in your face. He's so triggered
by the color of his skin.
That man's black skin, and it's just the oddity. Now, I can't even say oddity, that's too soft of a word, but just the insanity of seeing a person and dehumanizing them within a second of looking at them and saying, oh, brown, black, they must be this, they're this.
Right.
And you have all these ideas already in your head before even talking. You have not even the slightest idea of what kind of person they are, but you just forge all of these preconceptions about who they are, what they're capable of, and it's just absurd. It is absurd. I mean, the differences that are significant amongst us, or that are maybe worthy of note, most of the time, it's just cultural. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't really honestly make delineations based on skin color.
Absolutely.
So what are we talking about when we talk this race shit all the time? Or when you're on racism shit all the time?
Right.
Like, none of that matters. Right.
It does not matter. Like, we are literally all humans.
And I felt like this story just, I mean, it's so simple. I mean, all they did was say black hair are the new blacks.
Yes.
And I mean, it just instantly.
But
just,
once you realize that.
Yeah.
And everything they say after that sounds so ridiculous. You translate it to what no blacks allowed would mean in our America.
Yeah.
And it's like, it would sound just as ridiculous.
Yeah.
It does sound just as ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's like, I fucking love this story. Yeah. It was so smart.
Yeah. So.
But I enjoyed White Flight very much. I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, it's like I watched it again, and I think even in this conversation, I think it reflects something very different compared to our Tales from the Hood two and three discussion.
Yeah.
Because I think we pointed out a lot that we liked.
Yeah, there was a lot more that we liked than didn't like, and the things we didn't like were not as egregious as shit we didn't like in Tales from the Hood 2 and 3.
Yeah, I halfway expected, after watching this again, to find more shit to bitch about, and I didn't.
Yeah, no. No. So. I don't have issues with this movie at all. I would love to see another anthology, like an American Nightmares 2. Just where we at now.
Yeah, I take back what I said in a previous chat about not wanting to see more anthologies from them. I think if they're in this vein,
yes,
I think you're fine.
Yeah, don't call them Tales from the Hood, but if you want to like build on American Nightmares because it opens up a little more story-wise, you don't have to be so tied to making it like hood relevant and all of that. Yeah, like, it's just American free. Social commentary
yeah.
as horror. You can do so much more.
I agree.
And I'd love to see Rusty and Darren do it again.
Yeah, I would love something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sequels
based around. Do an American Nightmares 2.
Yeah, I was going to say American Nightmares.
You need some ideas, let us know.
An American Nightmares trilogy sounds good.
Because I could do that.
You're not so compartmentalized to...
Yeah, you are addressing American issues, not hood issues.
So it literally could be anything. Even if you wanted to put hood in there.
Exactly.
It could work.
Like, there are still things in there that, you know, weren't addressed. Like, there are still issues out there. There are other approaches to issues that they could do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's American Nightmares.
Yeah, that was our chat, man. I actually enjoyed talking about this one quite a bit.
Me too.
I really
Me too.
Did.
I liked this one as well because it was more tales.
Yeah,
so
and even
like
though it's
you
a
could
short...
have ended up in like ranking them, you had more to rank. So I was just really interested one to see where we both fell, and we still kind of ended up close on a lot.
Yeah,
and it just makes the conversation even more elaborate because your justification. I mean, there's just so much more to address.
Yeah. And it's surprising that the shorter length, given the greater number of tales in this, doesn't really hurt it. I mean, I think the only one where I felt the length was a little truncated was, what was it? I had my list right here.
Yeah, I was like, which
it
one
was,
did you say felt short?
Hate Radio. Hate. That was the only one I felt was kind of short, but... I don't think it hurt the story in any way.
I agree.
That was our American Nightmares chat. And
so now we've talked all the Rusty and Darren horror anthologies.
Oh, yes. This is it's over
so
for us.
So our next combo.
That's depressing.
It's almost over. We've got one more combo where we are now going to rank the movies.
That's right. So this is not
how
over.
How we rank the movies. We've gone through all their tales, but now where does Tales from the Hood, Tales from the Hood 2, Tales from the Hood 3, and American Nightmares, how do we rank them as total movies?
Well, if they were watching any of our previous episodes related to this, I don't think the suspense is very high.
I don't either, but I would just love to hear how we talk it out. Why we put where we... Y'all get one more conversation.
We're still doing this, but if you know, you already know.
Yeah. I don't know. There's 2 and 3 are... You don't know where they're going to fall.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah, we do. They do. They know exactly where they're going to fall.
So, you know, we'll rank them as just movies in general. How do they stand up, hold up against each other? And then that's how we will wrap up our Rusty and Darren week.
Boom. So this has been Al Rob
and Lady Rain.
And be kind, be well, and we will catch you all later. Peace.